Northwest River Park Drive, KCMO. Enjoy a vibrant celebration of Native American culture with a variety of Native American performers, artists, speakers, and community leaders on Saturday, September 30th from 10 a.m. until 2 p.m. Performances and demonstrations will include a flute workshop conducted by Janalea Hoffman, a Wichita War Dancer performance, and an Andean music performance from Armando Espinoza. During the festival, visitors can browse booths from represented tribal groups, including beading from the Wyandot, artifacts from the Kaw, visual artists from the Ottawa Tribe of Oklahoma, and more. This will take place at the Overlook Park Arboretum and Botanical Gardens, 8909 West 179th Street in Overland Park. For more information on these and many other events in our area, go to kkfi.org/artskcgo.
Hi, this is Willie Wilson. You're listening to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
The views and opinions of this program are those of its host and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Midcoast Radio Project, or its staff and volunteers.
About it is appealing, everything the traffic will allow. Nowhere could you get that happy feeling when you are stealing that extra bow. There's no people like show people. They smile when they are low. Yesterday they told you you would not go far. That night you open and there you are. Next day on your dressing room they costumes, the scenery, the makeup, the props, the audience that lifts you when you're down. The headaches, the heartaches, the backaches, the flops, the sheriff who escorts you out of town. The opening when your heart beats like a drum. The closing when the customers don't come. Get word before the show has started that your favorite uncle died at dawn. On top of that, your pa and ma have parted. You're brokenhearted, but you go on. There's no people like show people. They smile when they are low. Even with a turkey that you know will fold, you may be stranded out in the cold. Still, you wouldn't change it for a
Hello and welcome to this edition of the KKFI Arts Magazine Show. I am Michael Hoag, your host. Glad to have you with us on a very nice day out there. The sun is shining. The birdies are singing out there. Well, maybe not here in Midtown, but in places the birdies are singing out there as we bring you this edition of the KKFI Arts Magazine Show today. A couple of interesting things to talk to you about if you like to attend art shows, art fairs, and the like. There is one going on this coming weekend, Saturday, September 23rd, and Sunday, September 24th. It is the Peaceworks Annual Art Fair. It's in Tice Park. That's the one that's east of Oak, south of Cleaver Boulevard. If there were a numbered street there, it would be 47th Street. You can see the Nelson off to the north. It's on the south side of the street there. So that's going on. We're going to talk about that. It's in Tice Park with us to tell us all about the fair. We have two artists, and we have the representative from Peaceworks, which is Chris Mann. You've probably heard her before on the Heartland Labor Forum, where she is featured quite often. Welcome to another show, Chris.
Well, thanks. It's good to be on your show for a change.
A change of
change of pace.
Yes, right.
I don't have all the responsibility.
Well, that's true.
So this is fun.
Well, good, good. Well, but we're going to have questions for her, so she'll still get questions, just like she does on the Heartland Labor Forum as well. Two of the artists are with us as well. Jeff Sidney is with us. He is a glass artist and does some paper design. There was a word in your definition, let's say, that I was not familiar with. It had to do with glass arts. Borosillicate. And I'm not even going to try to say it. You say it.
Sure. Borosilicate.
Okay. How does that fit into glass work?
It's you could say it's relatively new, maybe about 100 years or so old. Most glass that you have, like a wine glass at the house, would be a coefficiency of 103, 104. Oh. This is a hard glass. You wouldn't see this on your show that you've seen. Everybody's seen that Blown Away. This is a hard glass. It's got a coefficiency of 33, so it's that Pyrex. You drop that on the floor, and you'll probably save it. So that's what I work with.
You blow glass now?
Yes. Yeah.
Do you?
We started with solid, with marbles. And
okay. Yeah. There's one at the Inglewood Arts Center. I've seen it there. Is that, do you ever work there by any chance?
I haven't had the chance yet. I'd like to, though.
Okay. Well, all right. We'll let you know. It's in the Inglewood section of Independence. Terry Rozelle is with us as well. He's a potter. He's been with us before. Pottery is his life now. But he also has a profession. But pottery is his life, I'm sure.
Pottery is my avocation.
Avocation. Yeah. Okay, that's good. Okay. Well, let's start with Chris. This is the Pieceworks Art Fair. And Pieceworks is an organization that's been around for some time now. And you sponsor this fair.
Yes, it's been going now for over 30 years, Pieceworks, Kansas City, and the art fair is formerly the Unplaza Art Fair. So if you want to get some great art in, just come this weekend, the 23rd and the 24th. The Saturday starts at 10 a.m. and goes to 6. And Sunday, it starts at 10 a.m. and goes only to 5.
Sure. Yeah, I more of a relaxed atmosphere, I've noticed, if you go to that other fair.
Yeah, the other fair.
It's more pricey.
Well, let's say
pricey, yeah.
And more creative, I would say.
Well, probably, yeah. But yours is a more relaxed atmosphere,
yes,
I think.
Yes, yes.
And it's in a park.
Yes.
And I don't hear people yelling at each other.
Lots of shade trees.
Yeah.
So that will come in handy this year.
And Tice Park, known for having gatherings, peace protests and things, were known to be in that park. So it's only right that you would have your art fair right there in Tice Park.
It's only fitting. You hit it on the nose.
Sure.
I say that we're the art fair with a bunch of old hippies. And then some younger folk like Jeff.
Oh, thank you. Thanks.
A much younger hippie.
Oh, well, I don't know about that. I'm 44. My birthday was just a little bit ago. So.
To me, you're a young one.
I'll accept that. Thank you.
You're a young one indeed.
Well, I think listeners will be surprised. We have young up-and-coming artists this year at the fair. I think it will be a pleasant mix of ages and diversity.
Okay, let me go great. Over that again since she brought it up. Saturday, September 23rd, that's coming up this Saturday, you know, this being the 18th, just a few days away, from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., of course, in Tice Park. Then on Sunday, September 24th, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., also in Tice Park, you can visit the Pieceworks Art Fair and see all that there has to offer. But before I ask you about that, tell me about some of the things that Pieceworks has done over the years that people might, you know, like to participate in with you.
Well, Pieceworks has a focus on ending nuclear weapons in the world. We had a Memorial Day rally out at the nuclear weapons plant here in Kansas City. We had also this year as well as pretty much every year, a remembrance of the nuclear weapons dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. We're also expanding. We're a local nonprofit, but we're also expanding and linking on to several national organizations like Physicians for Social Responsibility, Back from the Brink. As everybody, our listeners may know, that we are sort of in a stalemate war in Ukraine, and this is increasingly looking like there's two nuclear countries going at it, and this cannot end positively. So
sure. Well, the Soviets certainly have nuclear weapons. Do you suspect that the Ukrainians might as well? Is that what you meant?
No, I feel that there's two schools of thought on this. Some see it as a proxy war, that the United States is really funding this war and providing the weapons. Therefore, the nuclear powers are Russia and
I see. Yeah, well, you're right about that. We are providing most of what Ukraine says they need right now, and we're doing that. So in an indirect way, I guess we are at odds with them over there. And PeaceWorks, what kinds of things do PeaceWorks does? What kinds of things does PeaceWorks do to help people to understand this situation? Do you have, protest is a widely used word, but you have specific
coming up,
things?
Code Pink nationally is calling for demonstrations around the country for peace in both of all of those countries. So that would be September 30th to October 8th, and the action for this one here in Kansas City is not totally formulated yet, but we would ask everybody to look for it and participate if you can. There are approximately 25 other protests to stop the war. It's getting dangerous with the nuclear powers.
Sure, so. With two nuclear powers involved anyway, so certainly.
And also the death and destruction of hundreds of thousands of people so far.
Yeah, yeah. And they have did have, I don't know if it's still operable, a nuclear power plant in the Ukraine, which has had problems in the past.
Mm-hmm. Several, yes.
Yeah.
And so it's there have been many near nuclear accidents up to this point, and it's only a question of time, which is why PeaceWorks Kansas City focuses on the nuclear issue.
Certainly.
Getting rid of the nuclear weapons.
Do you have regular meetings where people can attend and discuss these issues?
We do. We have not weekly meetings, but monthly meetings. And I invite anyone to go on to PeaceWorksKC.org to find out about the events.
Yes, well,
we would sure like participation.
Thank you for telling all that, Chris. Yes, PeaceWorksKC.org to read about that, and the art fair that's going on. Now, who wants to go first? How about Terry? Terry, I remember Terry from last year.
Good to be
back.
And
we talked about your pottery and all that. That's an avocation for you, you said. You have other work that you do, but this is obviously something that is very near and dear to your heart.
It is. I'm an ethicist. I practice and teach ethics, Christian ethics, bioethics, clinical ethics, and of course, one of our concerns in the field of ethics is violence and peace. So one way to live peace is to study and teach ethics. Another way is to create. And so my vocation is ethics. My avocation is creating pottery in a lakeside studio where I'm privileged to work.
The one in Swill Park?
No, out at my home.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
There's
and,
a lakeside.
And the work that I do, I I give away. I don't keep any of the donations or proceeds for any of the work that I do, and because you know, again, I'm privileged to have other income, so I can give away my creations. And if I get donations, those donations are given to an international humanitarian organization that I started collaboratively with others called Living Love International. LivingLoveInternational.org is our website. We provide funding for projects that help kids and families, particularly in Ethiopia and Kenya.
You will have a booth there, actually a tent. It looks from the pictures, it looks like it was mostly tents.
It'll be a pop-up tent, yes.
And you can talk with people about your work. Some of your work you've brought with you today.
I have.
Chris has a coffee mug, which is a creation of yours.
It is, and I brought another one that I'm going to actually leave for you, Michael, out of gratitude for the support that you give to the arts and to all good causes here. So I make mugs, a lot of coffee mugs. I also make lamps that I put 99.9% paraffin oil in. It's non-carbon and smokeless, odorless, so it can be burned in the house or in a classroom, in a room, a building that allows that. So I've made hundreds or thousands of lamps.
Well, it looks like a candle in some ways.
It is a candle, but without the mess of melting wax.
Sure.
And then I've made hundreds or thousands of chalices. I'm ordained clergy for 40 years, and so I have a lot of clergy friends, and I've taught in a seminary for almost 25 years, so I have lots of students and alums who use my chalices in their religious work for ritual purposes.
Well, that must be kind of an honor for you to have them use it in their service.
It's wonderful to see. I'm a functional artist, so I love to see my pots used.
Sure. What is the most unusual pot of any kind now that you've made for someone or just of your own inspiration?
I don't know. It's maybe a little unusual that it's certainly not unique. I've learned it from other people, but I mix clay bodies, and so my mug that Chris has with her and that I'll leave with you looks marbleized or like an agate, and so that's a little unusual. I braid handles, not for every mug, because some people like a solid handle, but I've braided these handles, learned that from my artist daughter, and I like that because it dissipates the heat when you take it out of the microwave, and it's a good grip.
So it comes out of the microwave because of the ingredients and how it's made. It comes out of the microwave, not hot at the handle.
The handle doesn't come out hot.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a little unusual, I guess.
And they're just, it's like really looking at a campfire. It looks different every time you look at it. To me,
well, you have
you
a really
study it for.
Well, it's like a snowflake. Every one is definitely unique.
Uh-huh. Yeah, the handles are very unique looking. Yeah. How do you get it to twist like that? Do you do it during, before you heat it?
Well, I assume. I learned to do it from my artist daughter. But interestingly enough, I probably learned to braid when she was a little girl and I was fixing her hair to go to school or to church.
Ah.
And I would braid her long, beautiful red hair. And I learned to braid as a daddy, and then she taught me to put it onto mugs.
Will your name be on your tent so when people walk down there they'll know it's you, or does it just say pottery?
I think it will say Amani Lamps and Pots by Terrace.
Okay.
Terrace is my given name. Uh-huh. People call me Terrace or Terry, And I believe that will be on my tent somewhere. Otherwise, just look for the old guy who makes pots.
With braided handles.
Thanks. With braided handles. And, yeah.
Thanks for coming.
And long hair.
Sure. Thanks for coming. Jeff Sidney is with us as well. He is a glass artist and does some paper design. I know it's hot. I've seen glass being blown at that place in Inglewood. I mentioned that. Or down in Branson. I've seen it down in Branson as well.
Yep.
So that's sounds like it could be dangerous to do.
Oh, yeah. Actually, I've been on the torch for about 7 years, and this last year I actually ran my hand in the torch for a brief second, and I kept working, and I had to quickly decide that, yeah, this is something I need to take care of. So
sure.
If you get to a burn in the first 15 seconds with a little burn cream, and I just shut everything off, went upstairs, and got the ice pack. I just moved it around to this thing. Around this burn for probably about half an hour and nothing.
Well, good. He still has both hands. I want you to know they and they look fine.
Thank you. So
it can be difficult. How many different kinds of things can you make doing what you do?
Well, there's a wide variety of things, and first off, there's probably the scientific glass blowers, which I am not, but they're probably the most useful as far as creating the wide variety of science lab equipment that people use. Myself personally, I've started with marbles, and then we moved on to functional things, and then we went into jewelry, pendants, and right now I'm trying to get better at my shot glasses.
Oh, sure. Sure. Well, there's certainly a need for that.
They just trying to be more functional and more useful as opposed to just a collector item, like the marbles.
A useful item, as you said.
Yes, an everyday kind of functional. I've seen people make beer steins. But they'll do that on a lathe, so it's not something I have right now, but yeah, that very large stuff can get done on a lathe. And
now you'll have things, artwork of yours, for sale in your tent?
Yep. Yes, I will. Yeah. I'll be focusing on the marbles and jewelry.
Marbles are round, and I saw the ones you had out in the green room, and they are round. How do you blow it to get it so exactly round? And marbles that we know of, that we use for games and stuff, are they made in that way by blown glass?
Those are machine-made. They make several hundred, and it's kind of reflected in the price. And then sometimes you can find a lot of people will have real rare collectors because of the functions of the machines that did some things a certain way and very limited variety. My marbles are handmade on a torch. I have a Carlisle CC. It's called lamp working. So the torch sits on your bench, and you twirl glass in it. And then eventually just the function of spinning it, gravity, and the flame, which would want to draw the glass into itself the way that one bead of water draws into another bead of water. Those three elements combined will create a round sphere. And then from there, I'll putty up the other side, polish the other side. It's like looking at a globe. We'll go east, west, north, south, and then we'll go and we'll flip it 45 degrees, so northeast to southwest and so on.
Sure.
So that's, it's sort of really specific, I mean, to get it.
Yeah.
To almost mathematical to get it.
Definitely. Several punny shifts, several opposite poles, and to get it really round.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Sure. Tell us, we don't have a whole lot of time, I'm sorry, about your paper products.
Oh, sure, yeah. If you'd like to see what I'm talking about, you go back several posts on JeffSidney5 at Instagram, and you can see pictures. I do photographs that are, they're portraits, colored portraits made out of boxes that become photorealistic at about 10 or 20 feet. The boxes exist on a field on a six-dimensional perspective system that where they all fit together. So basically we're talking about the aesthetics of M.C. Escher combined with Chuck Close. And I'd like to make a book, and I'm in the process of looking for a literary agent. And again, you can see my work, JeffSidney5 at Instagram.
Do you have an email you would like them to use, or a number if you're comfortable with that?
Sure. My email would be kcliving807@gmail.com.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, no, looking for a literary agent. Perhaps someone knows that. There's all kinds of agents, of course, but you want one for your products.
Yes. Yeah, I'd like to make a book of these. I'm focusing on portraitures of people that are heroes. So we have Jim Rice. He's a baseball player, 1970s. Uh-huh. Saved this girl from a pop fly and to her head. Another guy, Eunice Carter, is who I'm working on right now. She's one of the first black lawyers in the 1920s. This lady brought down Lucky Luciano.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Eunice means joyful victory in the Bible.
And as I recall, Rice actually left. He was batting. He had a foul ball into the stands that he saw hit this lady.
Yeah.
So he stopped. He left the batter's box, went over to help her.
Yes. Yeah. And that stuff is, those people, we always focus on the salacious and the crude and the violent. You know, everybody knows those names, but nobody knows people anymore that have done crazy stuff that make our world a better place.
Sure.
Well, not, it's harder to good news travels slow, does it?
So you'd like to do features with via portraits that you're going to paint that will be in the book of these people along with the story that goes with it?
Yes. Yep. Real brief story kind of illustrating it. And I'm going to try to speed up the process from painting. I'm working in Photoshop now, kind of get a more seamless kind of picture.
Sure. But it would be interesting, though, to see them all in portrait. I know that's more work.
Thank you.
But that would be interesting as well.
Definitely.
Thanks so much for
thank you,
sharing your concept and your thoughts with us as well. There's other artists going to be there. Do any of you have a list? It's probably asking too much for a list, but the names of other people that might be there and what they'll be doing.
I have to throw out my daughter's name.
Okay.
This is the other daughter. Carice Roselle does beaded jewelry. She and her partner Teresa do seeds and chevrons, and
okay.
they're at various art shows, but they'll be at the Pieceworks KC art show, Seeds and Chevrons.
They'll be at the Pieceworks Art Fair as well. Anyone else you can think of, Chris, or Jeff?
I have a friend I went to school with at Kansas City Art Institute. Her name is Jo Ha. She's going to be there with some watercolor paintings, and she's actually works at a tattoo shop that just opened up recently.
Well, that is art. That is certainly art, yeah. Yeah, it's very... It's a very open kind of art, I must say.
Oh, yeah,
I know when people get tattoos, they often are, they must love it because they are often led to get even more tattoos.
Yeah, it becomes a habit, doesn't it?
Well, not for me, but for some people, it certainly does. Mm-hmm. It seems that well. Anything else we want to add, Chris, about the show?
Yes, I'll just say we have over 77 talented artists there, and you just have to come and take it all in.
It'll,
and I do want to add that there is free parking in the UMKC Cherry Street garage, and we do have shuttles coming from the garage to the fair.
Oh, that's something you might want to look up on your website. You probably have links. Because parking is a concern down there.
Yes, it's sort of crowded.
So you need to look that up and find out and decide ahead of time where you most likely would want to be for that. But it sounds like an interesting event, 77 different artists. So look for all the tents down there in Tice Park. That is the one, it's east of Oak Street, like Channel 41, for instance, is on Oak Street. And south of Cleaver Boulevard and just north of Tice Park is the Nelson Art Gallery, the Nelson Atkins Museum of Art down there. And that's where it is. Again, Saturday, September 23rd, 10 a.m. until 6 p.m., and Sunday, September the 24th, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. in Tice Park, and it will be going on Saturday and Sunday from mid-morning, 10 until 6 p.m. on Saturday till 5 p.m. on Sunday. You can go online, peaceworkskc.org. And we're sure about this phone number, Chris, 816-561-1181, all for more information. But you could probably get more information by going on their website as well, peaceworkskc.org.
Can I have one thing? We do have a social justice group section and different movements for social change groups. We'll have tables there, so come and explore those also.
Thanks so much, all of you, for being with us. Chris Mann from Peaceworks, Casey, she's the chair. Jeff Sidney, glass artist, and some paper design, and Terry Roselle, potter, all participating in the Peaceworks Art Fair going on this Saturday and Sunday in Tice Park. We're going to take our mid-show break. When we return, we'll have more for you. When we return, you're listening to the Arts Magazine radio program right here on KKFI. 90.1 FM.
Freeze Frame!
Hi, I'm Russ Simmons with Freeze Frame, KKFI's weekly look at the newest cinematic fare in theaters and streaming. Kenneth Branagh returns for his third go-round as Agatha Christie's famed detective Hercule Poirot in the spooky whodunit A Haunting in Venice. During a seance at an eerie Venetian villa in 1947, a medium, played by Michelle Yeoh, is murdered. It's up to the cunning Belgian sleuth to determine if supernatural forces are at play. Once again, Branagh serves as producer and director as well as star, and he's joined by Tina Fey, who suppresses her usual comic persona for a dramatic turn as a famed mystery novelist, and Jamie Dornan as a shell-shocked doctor. As director, Branagh reaches into a full bag of cinematic tricks to establish a moody atmosphere and maintain our attention. Frankly, the movie is over-directed, and his gimmickry mostly calls attention to itself. Plus, the mystery isn't too hard to figure out. The bigger mystery is how Poirot maintains his perfectly coiffed mustache through rain, flooding, and beating. Nevertheless, Haunting in Venice is an entertaining, old-fashioned lark for genre fans that serves as an eerie intro into the Halloween season. The inspirational Amazon Prime biopic A Million Miles Away tells the true story of Jose Hernandez, a migrant farm worker who persevered through multiple challenges over many years to become a NASA astronaut. Michael Peña plays Hernandez, a brilliant mathematician who never gave up on his lofty dreams of space travel. The usually reliable Peña isn't quite able to mine the more engaging aspects of this character, and while the movie is heartfelt and family-friendly, it's also overlong, slow-paced, and predictable. A Million Miles Away is still a comforting story of a life well-lived. Well, that's it for this edition of Freeze Frame. Until next time, I'm Russ Simmons with Fox 4 and KKFI FM.
Freeze Frame!
Coming up Thursday, September 21st at 7 p.m. on the People Power Hour, brought to you by Casey Tenants, we'll be talking about the Tenant Bill of Rights. Our guests will be Brandy Granados and Janae Manley, two people that were instrumental in both writing it and getting it passed. Want to know how we got here and how it can protect you from slumlords? Tune in to the People Power Hour, brought to you by Casey Tenants, on September 21st at 7 p.m.
Hey, Maynard, how many of those extra cars or boats do you really need laying around? Your yard is starting to look like a junkyard. Did you know KKFI would take one or all of those vehicles, running or not? You could get rid of them, providing you have a title, and KKFI would receive the funds, which would be a tax deduction for you. Call KKFI at 816-931-3122.
And welcome back to the Arts Magazine show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. I'm Michael Hogue, your host. In this half of the show, we're going to talk to the conductor, often referred to as Maestro. His name is Roberto Cobb, and he is with us today. We're going to talk about the Lyric Opera and the show they have coming up. I guess maestro is a revered term for a conductor?
Well, you know, the term comes from the meaning of it, which just means teacher. And so it originated from orchestras calling, the person that was leading them, the maestro. I think in the cultures, like, for example, in Italy and in Mexico or in Spain, where that word is very commonplace, there's not, you know, that sort of reverential, you know, in Italy, everyone in the room is a maestro, really. The pianist is a maestro, you know, the prompter is a maestro, and the conductor is a maestro. So it's more casual. I feel like in English-speaking countries, it's become this thing. But, you know, people can call me anything, as long as they're respectful, you know. People sure. can call you maestro and not be respectful, and, you know, they can call you Roberto and be very respectful. Sure. So it's just something that I think has... there's also that Seinfeld episode, you know, of course, of the maestro.
That's right,
you know?
That's right, that's right, yeah.
That's the other one. You know, it has this stigma, but, you know, it's just a term that means a teacher, a leader.
I only ask because I had a conductor one time who asked me specifically not to call him maestro. Yeah. So I didn't, of course.
Yeah, well, I also find that if you tell people don't call you maestro, I find I like to let people decide on their own who I am, and then they can feel free to... to call me whatever. You know?
Well, I'm sure they like and respect you. You seem like a very nice person.
Thank you very much.
And thank you for coming.
It's my pleasure to
you
be
You came
here.
To the Lyric Opera last year for Carmen. And you're back, so I take it that that was a good experience for you?
It was a wonderful experience. We had a great run. Had a great collaboration with the Kansas City Symphony. It was wonderful, and Deb Sandler and Brad Trexel liked my work, I guess. So they brought me back here for a second go, and I'm thrilled to be back.
I'm sure they do. Roberto has worked in quite a few places. Just to encapsulate a few places: the San Francisco Opera, San Diego Opera. Wolf Trap, I've been to Wolf Trap. Mm-hmm. That's a very nice outdoor place.
It's beautiful. Place.
It is beautiful. Opera Theater St. Louis, not to be confused, folks, with the Muni Opera of St. Louis. It's two different organizations.
Correct.
Yes. Detroit Opera, where I guess you're currently working most of the time.
I'm music director there, and that requires of me two productions a year, plus whatever gala we do some special event. So that means that I'm there about 3 or 4 months out of the year, and the rest of the year I'm guest conducting elsewhere.
Oh, sure. Well, whenever opera singers come on, they always tell me about how they travel here. In a couple of months, I'm singing in France. Quite a few air miles.
It's the life, you know, and my wife is a soprano as well. Very successful one, so she's also flying all over the world, and she's currently in Berlin. It's the one time we're upset because we can't be together for a month and a half. It's the most we've been apart in a long time, but she has a big debut at Deutsche Oper Berlin, and so we can't make it to each other's performances, unfortunately, this time.
And as from what I know, that's one of the big ones in Germany.
It's the largest opera house in Berlin.
Yeah. Do you prefer, or does she prefer, both of you, the smaller, more intimate houses, or the big voluminous houses such as the Kauffman Center? That's a big room.
It's a big room. There's pros and cons to each. I would say that as long as the room has a good acoustic, I'm okay with it. And of course, it depends also on the singers you cast. You know, if it's a smaller theater, you can afford to hire singers that would sing sort of lighter repertoire, could sing larger repertoire in smaller houses. And so it just depends on how you cast. And of course, in smaller theaters, you can't do Wagner opera, for example, because the musicians don't fit into the pit, for example. But every house has its pros and cons. As long as they have a good acoustic, I'm okay with it.
I have sat on the very top row at the Kauffman Center. Could hear perfectly.
Yeah, well, those are usually the best seats for acoustics. Just the sound travels up and blends beautifully. And usually the worst seats are up close in the orchestra level. But those offer the most connection with the singers dramatically because you get to be close to them physically.
Yeah. Well, I have more questions about that, but I haven't said the name of the opera yet, and I'm avoiding it because I had trouble pronouncing it. But Cavalleria?
Cavalleria.
Rust.
Rusticana.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I may call on you later. That is the first one. Pagliacci. That's the one about the clown.
Yeah.
Violent clown, let's say.
That's understatement. Yes, he ends up being very violent in the end.
Yes. They're both on the same bill, beginning on a Saturday, the 23rd of September at 7:30 p.m. That would be the opening. Performances continue then on Friday, the 29th at 7:30 p.m. and conclude on Sunday, the 1st of October at 2 o'clock p.m. at, of course, the Kauffman Center, just south of downtown Kansas City. It's a big room. Everyone says that, and it is. It's a beautiful building as well.
It's beautiful, and it's perfect for this sort of grand opera. I mean, it's not technically grand opera. It's, you know, verismo, Italian verismo, but it's perfect for large chorus shows. And in both of these shows, the chorus plays a huge role. Big orchestra, lush sounds, dramatic sounds. So it's a great venue for this.
Sure. And it opens, of course, on the 23rd. How long have you been here working with the orchestra? Do you need many rehearsals for these? I would assume yes.
Well, that's an interesting question. The short answer is yes, but usually due to the scheduling and the expense, we don't get as many rehearsals as we would have like. No conductor says that they have enough rehearsal ever. So I had two reads, we call them, two orchestra rehearsals with the Kansas City Symphony, which is fantastic. And basically that was enough to run through both operas and rehearse a little bit. And then we have two rehearsals with the orchestras and singers, and then we have two dress rehearsals with the orchestras and singers before we open. But that's not counting the 2 weeks ahead of time that I rehearse with the singers in a room with a piano. And that's when the stage director, the wonderful Shauna Lucy, who's this is actually a new production of hers, she gets to work with the singers, staging them, all the dramatic action, all the coordination, all of that, like internal monologues, all these things that the singing actors have to do. And of course, I have my music time with the singers as well as part of that. So it's actually, except for new productions in Europe, which get 6 full weeks, the U.S. model is actually quite attractive because we get to rehearse quite a bit more than European houses do. So, for example, a standard repertoire piece like this in a German house might not get any rehearsal. They might get maybe a week in the room and maybe one rehearsal with the orchestra and you're on. So there are some things that are very appealing about opera in the United States.
What kinds of things do you work first with the singers on? They have a director as well, but you're the conductor, so mm-hmm. It's kind of a coordinated effort.
Absolutely. So we work on many things. We work on language. You know, this opera is in Italian, so we work on the nuance of the language, the pronunciation. We work on phrasing, you know, how the musical phrases flow, the tempi, how fast things are going. It's very interesting for me, the first rehearsal with the singers, because, of course, as a conductor, you study your score and you have a vision of the tempo and all these things. And then as soon as you hear somebody's voice, then you adapt a little bit, or, well, at least you should, not everyone does. And that's one of my favorite parts of the job, where I try to make singers sound their best and feature them whilst maintaining my score study and honoring the composer. So we do all of that, and it's wonderful work. It's one of the most rewarding parts of the job, getting to work with singers in that capacity.
Oh, of course. Let's talk a little bit about the opera itself. It's in two pieces, mm-hmm. as I stumbled through, and you pronounced perfectly.
Yeah, Cavalleria Rusticana to start with.
Yeah, and let's talk a little bit about that, because it's a story that is sung.
Yes.
So, you know, people have to listen and pay attention, and it's sung in Italian.
It's sung in Italian. However, we have super titles that are projected over the stage. And so it's basically like watching any show with subtitles. You'll know exactly what everyone's saying at any given time. And that's really important, actually. I tell people that they should read. You know, it's important to know what singers are saying, because it's not just beautiful singing, not just beautiful melodies. The music represents some sort of dramatic action. And in order for that to be understood, then we need to know what's going on in the story. And you can read a synopsis too before the opera. Although there is something to be said about being surprised. In both of these operas, if you don't know what's going to happen, then I think it might be worth it not to read what happens, just to get the shock value.
Yeah. I was surprised, and I shouldn't have been. I've seen quite a few of them over the years, but sometimes the performers are so good at their acting, even though they're singing.
Mm-hmm.
They're also acting on stage. You can often interpret what's happening just from the way they're doing things.
Absolutely. And here, for example, we have incredibly talented, world-class singing actors. They're incredible singers, but also really engaging and believable actors.
Is it the same people in both?
No.
No? Okay.
No, the only doubling is Gevorg Hakobian, who is an incredible Armenian bass baritone. He's singing Alfio in Cavalleria Rusticana and Tonio in Pagliacci, and he's the only one that's in both. But for the other operas, it's double cast. So we have two different casts.
Oh, so of the three performances, two out of the three will be one group and one the other?
No, I mean that. So the same singers won't be singing in both operas is what I mean. So after Cavalleria, the first cast will take their bow. And then we'll start Pagliacci, and then that cast will take the bow at the end of the show.
And I assume the intermission is right in the middle.
Right in the middle. Every opera is a little more than an hour long, but it flies by. The music is amazing, and everyone... So if you haven't been to an opera, this is the one to go to, because you'll sit and you'll recognize every other tune, and it's never boring. It's action-packed. Very dramatic, very beautiful music. It's really not dull at all. It's a very engaging experience.
Isn't that often the case? We recognize a song, but sometimes we don't know where it came from.
Yeah. And putting it in context is really, I always find revelatory. I find it so cool that I heard a song growing up as a kid in a commercial, and then all of a sudden, you know, there it is in Carmen or wherever. So it's great.
In some of the old Warner Brothers cartoons, it's mostly classical music they have playing in the background.
Yeah, and very well-performed classical music. You know, they had amazing orchestras for all those cartoons.
Oh, sure. Yeah. We're speaking with Roberto Cobb. He is the conductor of the Kansas City Symphony Orchestra in the Lyric Opera production of...
of Cavalleria Rusticana and Pagliacci, double bill.
Yes, and I'm going to ask him now about Pagliacci. I've seen it before, so I'm trying not to reveal too much in what I say.
Yeah.
But it's a violin opera, but also it was a lot of fun for me to watch at the same time.
Yeah, I think so. The plot line is... it's a troupe of clowns that are playing the usual commedia dell'arte story, you know, where Colombina is being unfaithful and, you know, the clown comes back and everyone laughs at it because it's like a little story, and then she gets caught, but she gets forgiven after, you know, a little beating or whatever. And it's all very funny kind of in the show. But in this show, real life is mirroring the troupe story. So in real life, Nedda is having a relationship with Silvio. Nedda plays Colombina. And Canio, the clown in the show, her husband, you know, in the end, there's the play within the play. So we actually have an audience on, like the chorus is the audience on stage watching a play, and they go through the motions, but then we start to realize that it's actually real life, and it's Kanye's being very jealous. And I don't want to give too many spoilers, but you can imagine what happens.
Sure. Yeah. Well, operas are known sometimes for the tragedies. It became a comedian's joke for a while. That opera is always it's either a comedy or a tragedy.
Yeah.
And which do you like the best?
Yeah, but like you say, until those very serious moments, there's a lot of fun. There's a lot of comedy. There's a lot. You don't sense the tragedy until later. And Cavalleria is a much more serious story because it's all real life. And people will recognize the music immediately because it was featured in the third Godfather movie. And so when they go to the opera in the end, that's the opera. And the famous tune, the intermezzo that everyone knows, that they don't know, but they know, that's in the middle of that piece. And that'll remind people of The Godfather 3. And it's a Sicilian story about jealousy. And basically, it's a love triangle between Turiddu, Santuzza, and Lola. And Alfio sort of like... So, I mean, long story short... Turiddu promised to marry Lola, but he went to war. So then Lola married Alfio. He came back from war, saw that, and said, okay, well, I'm going to get together with Santuzza. Then they're together, and in the beginning of the opera, we infer that Turiddu's actually cheating on Santuzza with Lola. And so there's this, you know, the love, and so obviously... and then Santuzza is very upset about this. And so she's the one that sort of orchestrates how the events are going to go at the end of the opera. And it is a tragedy. I won't tell you how. But it's really all about like the Sicilian honor, vengeance, and religion, actually. And there's a lot of choral music, sort of church music, that's some of the most beautiful music ever composed, I think. And Mascagni wrote it when he was very young. He won a competition with it, actually. It was an open call for composers. He was in his 20s. And he wrote it in very fast and in a bout of inspiration. And he played the whole opera himself and sang all the parts for the jury and won immediately. And it became his most famous opera throughout his life. So he passed away in his 80s. And still, the opera that he wrote in his 20s was the most famous, even though he wrote many operas later. And it's an incredible, raw piece. It's really like raw emotion. And it's really, really, it's action-packed as well. So, it's a great piece.
Came from some of his own emotion as well. I get that opinion from listening to you.
Yeah, for sure.
That he thought that for sure. The shows, two of them, open on Saturday, the 23rd of September at 7:30 p.m. Performances continue on Friday, the 29th at 7:30 p.m. and conclude on Sunday, October the 1st at 2:00 p.m. All of the performances at the Kauffman Center for the Performing Arts, just south of downtown. It's a beautiful building there. In some ways, if you see some of the outside, it depends on where they do the photo from. Mm-hmm. It looks a bit like the Sydney Opera House. Have you ever been to that one?
I've never been in person, but it does look similar to sort of like the oval sort of shape, like the sails, you know, of a ship.
Sure. Is that for acoustics?
I'm not sure that was the... I don't know that they had that was the reason for it, but I can imagine it might have been. Actually, I haven't been in the Sydney Opera House, but I hear that the acoustics are similar to this. So
sure, when they had the Women's World Cup about a month ago, they showed a lot of sites, and the Sydney Opera House was featured in one of the features that I saw.
Oh, interesting!
It's a beautiful building as well.
Well, interestingly enough, the tenor that's singing Canio has sung. I don't know how many roles at the Sydney Opera House. He actually lives in Australia. He's a Mexican tenor, and he's been based in Australia for the last 12 years. And this is his first gig back in the States, I think in like a decade or more. He used to be a young artist at the LA Opera program back in the day. And he's coming back to the States and doing some work here. So we're really excited to have him. Diego Torres is his name. He's a wonderful, wonderful tenor.
I'll bet you are. Opera is very international.
Very.
They come here, you travel there. Mm-hmm. And that seems to be the case with a lot of the opera singers that I've interviewed. And I'm sure that's the same with a lot of the conductors as well.
Absolutely. And this cast also has a lot of people from overseas and some Americans. As I told you, Gevorg is Armenian. He lives in Armenia. He just finished his debut in Verona and flew here directly from Verona.
Wow.
Sam Hanke, who plays Santuzza, is American, but she sings all over the world. She was based in Munich for a while. She just had a big splash at the Met. Great debut in Santa Fe Opera. And then Adam Smith, who sings Turiddu, is a British tenor. But he's based in the United States, a wonderful, wonderful singer. And Gabby Reyes, who sings Nedda, she is American, but also, you know, she's sung a lot at the Met, and an incredible singer. And then Luke Sutcliffe is, I think, from Texas, I want to say, or at least he's been living in Houston. He was part of their resident artist program. And he also just had a big successful debut in Santa Fe Opera, replacing Rolando Villazón last minute for opening night. And I get to work with him next year in Santa Fe Opera for Elixir of Love. So it's really the cast, I have to say, is out of this world good.
Sure.
Like you, I don't think you, at any house in the world, I don't think you could get a better cast for these two operas than we have here. And I'm not just saying it to bring people to the theater. I really mean it. I wouldn't say it if it wasn't true. So I'm really excited about it.
Yeah. Santa Fe has quite a good reputation. I see that on so many of the credits I read about.
It's an incredible place. It's the actual venue is so beautiful. And also the orchestra is fantastic because it's a very coveted gig. It's a lot of people from the best orchestras in the country that they're all dying to play in that orchestra. So they audition for that job, and they do great repertoire. They bring in some of the best singers in the world, and it's a beautiful, beautiful place.
The double bill will happen once again on Saturday the 23rd at 7:30, Friday the 29th at 7:30, and Sunday, October 1st at 2 o'clock p.m., at the Lyric Opera, their production at the Kauffman Center, just south of downtown. It's big room. But the maestro said sometimes the seats on the very back row are some of the best seats. So bear that in mind as you make your arrangements for all of that. It was great having you here,
it's
Roberto.
It's a pleasure to be here, Michael. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for being with us. Roberto Cobb. The maestro, I should say, Roberto Cobb.
Roberto's good. Roberto's good.
He's conducting the Kansas City Symphony during the Lyric Opera production of, here we go,
Cavalleria Rusticana and Pagliacci.
And Pagliacci, you've probably heard about before. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
I appreciate
very much.
You making the time to do this. I'm sure you're in your busy time getting ready for the show. Thanks so much for
being
here.
Thank you very
much.
It's my pleasure.
The number, of course, is 816-471-7344, or you can go online to their website, where you can also make your arrangements, kcopera.org. Thank you for coming, Roberto.
Thank you very much.
The Jazz Canadian is coming up next. We'll have, in true KKFI tradition, by the way, we'll have jazz from 1 to 3. We'll have the blues from 3 to 6 right here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City's community radio. So until next we meet, ladies and gentlemen, at that cross in the road, I'm Michael Hook. We'll see you next time.